Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast, a day late. Thank you for the patience. We all had big Valentine's Day plans, i.e. we're all staying at home and, you know, watching movies on the couch. So that's really... so that this is Gabe Lesnar.
Surprisingly accurate, Gabe.
Yeah,
shockingly accurate.
This is Gabe Lesnar. I'm being joined by the whole crew tonight. It's Kian Sobani, Josh Zeitlin in New York. Kian is in Nova Scotia. Mike, where are you based in Mike Platania?
I'm in Blacksburg, Virginia.
Very cool. And so we are all here tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about Athletic. We're going to talk a little bit about Roma. And we're going to talk a little bit about Marcelo and going to take your questions also. Guys, so Madrid 4, Athletic Bilbao 2. I think the big story of the game, other than getting an important win, was the kind of inconsistent play, I think, out of Varane. But do you guys have any other big overarching narratives you want to bring up?
I mean, it's nice to see Ronaldo completely demolish a defender one-on-one again. I mean, it seems like his return to form has been kind of shaky, but I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. It's really nice to see him beat guys one-on-one, which was something we hadn't been seeing. Danny Carvajal at left back, something I never thought I'd say, but like we were saying before we started recording, it's like a pretty interesting game. I guess it's like hard to react to it now a few days later, but Athletic are a really good team. They were coming off a really tough run of fixtures. I mean, they had just played Villarreal, they had just played Barcelona in the Copa del Rey, so they weren't, maybe they weren't at full fitness just because they had been thrown into the mixer the last month or so, but yeah, that was a really tough test, and it was a good win. I was happy with the performance.
Yeah, I was not super happy with the performance. I thought the defending was terrible. I thought we were pretty lucky. I mean, it's true that the first Atleti goal, is a complete giveaway. I mean, it's essentially a Varane own goal. He doesn't put it in the net, but it's a back pass, one of the worst back passes I've ever seen, actually. But in general, the defense was really quite porous, but in a different way from we've seen before, which I thought was interesting. I mean, Athletic are really good in the air, so it was a bit more on the flanks than through the middle like we normally see. And I thought that might. I was interested to hear what you guys thought about this. I was looking back at it and thinking about it and thinking that, with Kovacic playing in midfield, it seemed like more of the Athletic chances were down the wing, and that could be viewed as a kind of success for Kovacic in midfield in a certain way.
I don't disagree with that, actually, Josh. And I just want to go back to the beginning of what I said. When I said the Varane being a little bit inconsistent, what I meant is the defense being itself kind of an overall patchwork, a little bit inconsistent, but an interesting mix of some encouraging things. I thought, like Mike said, that Carvajal was an interesting play and not as kind of disastrous as I thought. And then all some of the negative things we were speaking about. And it also speaks to the kind of struggle that this team does still. Depth remains a problem despite the real work that they did over the offseason to bring in players to beef up the midfield. The defense still remains an area of depth, right? So now Varane will be suspended for the next Liga game. It looks like Pepe is going to be injured. So where are we, right? Are we going to play Nacho then in center mid or center back with Ramos? I mean, this is still an area where this team's a little bit weak. So it's interesting. I think it'll be nice to see Zidane have to play a little bit of whack-a-mole here with the different injuries. Kian, what did you think going into, what was the general feel of this match for you? I've seen a lot, actually pretty wide variety of different people feeling different ways about this.
Oh, man, I'm trying to think of where to start. First off, I think it's always nice having Josh on these podcasts to keep us in check and bring us down to earth.
Everyone comes at me for my negativity. It's always Josh coming at me.
Somebody's gotta keep it real.
That's you, Josh. You keep it real.
Yeah.
I like the timing of this this victory. If there was some defensive lapses, I mean, I like the fact that we We started off the top part of the schedule on a winning note, and then we go into Roma with Ronaldo, who is in form. And there was a few things I liked in this game. And one of them was that Carvajal on the left and Danilo on the right, surprisingly better than I thought it would work out, which gave me some confidence in, you know, losing Marcelo was never ideal, obviously, because we have no other really good natural left backs. But Carvajal played a nice game there, and I thought Danilo had one of his better games. So I liked that, and I also liked how Kovacic came in and just played a really nice game, like on both ends of the field. Like, he's a really nice box-to-box midfielder. And I wonder, this is not something I really looked out for, but when Josh mentioned that the struggles came from the wing, that is something that Isco would really help out in defensively when he was playing in that position where Kovacic was, where he would always drop back and cover the wing backs making those runs. So maybe that's something that was affected with Kovacic there instead. I'm not sure, but obviously I don't know what the heck Baran was doing. He had so many better options. Like, literally any other decision but passing it back in that situation would have been such a better decision. And even if he had decided to pass it back, which he did, the way he passed it back was like, the chances of him, out of everything he could have done, doing that was mind-blowing that he actually managed to do that. But
you've got to take the corner there. I mean, yeah, it's the conservative play, but that was a very risky thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's still something of a concern with Varane. I mean, his decision-making can be a little suspect, which I think is a little disappointing. I mean, I kind of had expected him to make more progress than he has.
I don't think that's totally fair. I think that, I mean, every defender will occasionally make questionable choices in defense. And we've seen Ramos, we've seen Pepe make back passes that they hadn't really thought about. And I think it's important to have moments like this for Varane to realize how important it is to kind of slow the game down at moments like that and not make mistakes like some of these. And I've been encouraged overall with him. I don't disagree. I don't disagree with him being kind of a off and on player a little bit more than I'd like, but I do think that he is, you know, I do think he's still a very, you know, he's still a strong play, and he's who I would like on my defensive line.
Madrid. He is only 22, and I feel like his decision making will probably get better.
Yeah, I mean, I think my expectations were raised well above normal by how good he was before his knee injury. And like Hesse, I don't think he's really ever quite come back to the level that he was playing at that time. And part of that is because he didn't have quite as many opportunities to play when he came back from injury. But part
I disagree.
Of it is
I think,
also his performances haven't been as good.
I think he's looked... I mean, maybe it's just because he's gotten so many more minutes than Hesse, but I feel like he's been... I mean, his acceleration and speed and agility are just otherworldly, I think.
Like, well, I don't think it's a physical problem with him at all. I think it's a mental problem.
Yeah, 100%. I think... Yeah, and just another thing about Athletic is that, I mean, they're tied for, like, fourth in terms of goals scored in La Liga, and their goal difference is about even. So that's, like, this 4-2 type of game is kind of what you expect of them. And, I mean, their last goal, it was the same exact type of goal that Sporting scored when they were down by a fair margin a few weeks ago, where Real Madrid just kind of starts to sleepwalk in defense, which is frustrating to watch. And that's something that I feel like isn't talked about enough. Like, more often than not, the people who win the title is the team that has the best defensive record. And, I mean...
Well, so Atleti is going to win the title then.
Yeah, I was looking
necessarily
at it before.
Put it past.
Yeah, I mean, Atleti has conceded 11 goals, which is just stupid. Barcelona is at 18, Real Madrid is at 23, to kind of get a feel for what that's like. It is frustrating to concede these like late game goals that really shouldn't be conceded.
I mean, that was an incredible header. I just want to say, like, I mean, you know, if you're going to concede on that, that's not the kind of goal that I look at. I'm like, that's, you know, you shouldn't be conceding that kind of goal. Maybe you shouldn't be, but it was a really, really good goal.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything away from it, but it would just be nice for to see them just completely suffocate a team rather than just give them like a sympathy goal.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, during the first half, they were very dangerous. There were a lot of opportunities. I mean, remember Kalar had to come out in the middle of the first half and make a very, very good challenge that hit, you know, came out like a lightning bolt. Made a good save too from a shot high that was looked like it was going just under the crossbar. So, you know, they definitely could have gone either way, but then we scored a couple goals in really quick succession. I mean, we haven't talked about James's goal, but like,
woof.
That was an unbelievable. But and then, you know, you go into, you know, you go into the set, into the halftime interval, you know, 3-1 up. That's game essentially. So, yeah, so I mean, appreciated the ability to kill that game off when it looked like things were not going well. I think that was a very competently handled half of football.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, it was a pretty convincing win over a really good team. Obviously, a team that is just nightmarish at home, but they're still a strong team on the road, too. So, yeah, it's a great win. I'm psyched about it. I think, I mean, like, we could harp for hours about James's goal. Like, that was absolutely absurd. You know, Ronaldo's second goal was a really, really tough, composed finish, I think. His first goal was obviously sensational as well. So,
all the goals except for the error were really good.
Yeah, it was just
a fun game.
Just another one of these Zidane era, this is a fun game to watch type games, right? Like, this is a fun game. I enjoyed it.
At some level, I mean, I feel like, I mean, maybe this is a bit of a Debbie Downer thing to say, but I kind of feel like we're out of the title race. We're quite a bit back from Barcelona. I don't think it's really an achievable goal. So it's
well, that is actually something that we should be talking about. We did have a question about that, in fact, on Twitter, I think. And whether, you know, I mean, look, I don't think Madrid should hedge at all, but I do think that, you know, using the Liga to kind of mesh as a team and not take it seriously and not do all, but just try to take the games with, you know, a certain panache and try to go out and win and fight and try to win in this style that we've kind of come to expect from that Ancelotti team that looked so good, and now this Zidane squad that has looked a lot like the Ancelotti team that we all knew. That's a fun Madrid to watch, and at the end of the day, sure, maybe this Madrid puts together a great winning streak, and even that's not enough, but, you know, fuck, at least it's a good time to watch it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of past that stage where these late conceded goals bother me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had questions before, people asking, what do Real Madrid need to do to close out games better? Well, I mean,
they winning? They're winning the game.
That's the thing, like, closing out a game.
Yeah, that's only a problem if they're losing.
Exactly, right? Yeah. I mean, sure, it's annoying to concede these consolation goals, but I mean, in the end of the day, I'm kind of past worrying about these things.
I agree with that.
To be honest, when we look back at the most fun or the best seasons Real Madrid has had, they've never been known for being a defensive juggernaut. That's never been their forte. Like, I kind of expect that this comes with the baggage of being a Real Madrid fan, is that even when the team is really good, it's not going to be leak-proof defensively. It's right. Just something I've come to expect at times.
Yeah, I'm just more concerned. I think it'll come back to bite them at some point, just by pure probability. But I didn't mean for it to sound like I think it's this glaring issue that needs to be addressed pronto.
Josh is a bad influence on you.
Ah, welcome to the dark side.
I mean, if we're talking, I mean, like, on some level, this Madrid is undefeated under Zidane, and this is a game against a rather high profile. A rather high-profile squad. We're nitpicking a little bit, right? So let's go ahead and nitpick.
Yeah,
so this is a nit that we can pick, so to speak.
Yeah, we only have so much material to go on to evaluate Zidane's era so far,
right? And so, you know, we've had.
You could talk about Betis. We could go back and just pick over that forever,
right? But I mean, look, one game. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, like what you said before, Gabe, Like, the eternal optimist, I don't think Real Madrid are out of the title race in La Liga. I mean, it's only 7 points with, like, 17, 16, however many matches to go. Like, that is a lot of droppable points. And, like you said, and we talked about this, like, upon Zidane's appointment, is that, like, this might be a really unique season in which the manager of Real Madrid isn't under extreme pressure to win the league and to win everything, you know? So I agree with that. It is, you know, it's fun to watch. It seems like Zidane is enjoying himself. It looks like the players are enjoying themselves and they're getting results, which is obviously what's most important.
Right. It's the most important thing. So I think we're on the same page here on that one. I understand why others would say otherwise. Now, that being said, we're out of the Copa. We are, you know, we're behind in the league to the extent that we shouldn't expect to win it. There is one tournament that we're still in, guys, and that's the Champions League. And is this season are we having a problem with this season if we don't, you know, make a deep run in the Champions League?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that that's always true, though. At this point, if Real Madrid doesn't reach the semifinals of the Champions League, that's a crisis. That's just the reality. I mean, you guys could feel free to disagree, but I think that would be
deal. I think it depends on what you mean by crisis. Would the media in Madrid, and I use the term media with a grain of salt, would the media in Madrid call it a crisis? Yes. Would they use it to whip it up to you know, get rid of, you know, non-Spanish or whatever players? Yes, but is it something that we as fans can melt, should melt down about? I'm not sure.
I think it depends on what the match is.
Right, I agree. I mean, so let's say we get
the eventual champion in the 16.
Or like we draw Barca in the quarters or whatever. I don't know if that's possible. If we draw Bayern or someone, like, fuck, it's a bad matchup and we got unlucky. But like, you know, if we drop out there, yeah, it's bad, but it's
yeah. But if you have to see it in the context of a season in which, you know, we lost out on the Copa del Rey just through being idiots, and we lost out on
this season.
We
is
very a, possibly lost out on La Liga.
This season is a disaster, and it's you know, due to a couple. Well,
interestingly enough, I mean, that can be blamed on Benitez. Fairly.
No shit, really.
So I think this is the extent to which, even if the season goes completely pear-shaped, I just think that Zidane still needs to do well enough in the Champions League to not have pressure start to mount on him at a very significant rate. I don't think it will be enough to drive him out in the summer, but I do think that if he doesn't perform at least to an adequate standard in the Champions League, then come next year, the climate will be much different for him.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think, given that the way this season has unfolded, I think it would be disappointing not to make at least a pretty deep run in the Champions League. And by the way it's unfolding, I mean that we're just looking at the Champions League schedule. The draw was favorable this round. We get to see three other heavyweight matchups and letting six pretty strong teams fight amongst themselves. So you kind of hope that a couple of people will be knocked out there and get out of the way. And I mean, if we assume Barca wins their game in hand, that's 7 points, right? So, I mean, it's not impossible. I'm not throwing in the towel right now for La Liga, but if I'm Zidane, I'm at least thinking about putting more eggs in the Champions League basket.
You're right, Kian. I just want to say, I'm looking at the schedule now. You're totally right about this being a very favorable, not saying Roma is an easy, let's be clear, but you're right. We have, this is a draw where we ended up with Paris-Chelsea, Arsenal, Barca, Juve, Bayern, right? So three of those teams are going to be out, and those are three teams that all three of them could make a long run in the Champions League, with maybe the exception of Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, I know I sure as hell wouldn't want to be playing Arsenal on the heels of that thrilling victory they had over Leicester over the weekend. Like, I know that obviously Barca is the heavy favorite, but I would rather be playing Roma. And I agree that Zidane is probably absolutely going to be going, you know, balls out, for lack of a better phrase, when it comes to the Champions League, because it's the most attainable.
It's the most attainable, and it's the most relevant to both his narrative of success, right? He's a player who became famous to a large part due to his, you know, success in the Champions League, and because it's a big part of Madrid's narrative.
Yeah.
So it's more important to Madrid than La Liga is.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, so, how do you put, how is Zidane going to really put his eggs in the Champions League basket? When you think about it, the answer is he has to rotate more. Like, if I'm looking at a schedule and we have a La Liga game, and then 2 or 3 days later we have a Champions League knockout round.
That's correct.
I'm going to rest, you know, players like Modric or Cruz.
That's why he rested Isco.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like,
you got to rest more. I agree with you, Kian. Yep. Sorry to cut in. I think you're totally right.
But to some extent, I mean, you know, not being in the cup means we don't have to rest as much. We have a decently sized squad. I know we have some big injuries right now. So in theory, we shouldn't have to do that much rotating, that much more rotating, because we have a break, and then we don't have to play these cup games.
That's also true. I want to say also, though, that we also have – so what rotations mean in my mind were always that you're rotating in kind of lower-level players to kind of sub in to rest your number one guys. The truth is, though, that this squad is, especially in midfield, so deep – that it's pretty clear that there's not one best squad. So I would, instead of thinking about it as rotating, I mean, we can call it rotating, but I mean, like, maybe we can talk about this ourselves, amongst ourselves, but gun to your head, do you have a squad that you're running out for every game, just obvious starting 11? I'm not sure. And that's good, which means that he has some time. He can use the Liga to kind of tinker and say, oh, so in this kind of situation, maybe a Modric, Kovacic, Kroos pairing will be, you know, XYZ versus, like, maybe we need to bring in a Casemiro, kind of a holding situation with Casemiro in the midfield, or maybe we can put in, you know, drop Isco back into the midfield, or James or whatever, right? So I feel like rotations, we get the implication that the team isn't as good that rotating in, but actually the team looks pretty damn good in the different formations in midfield. I think the one part where the rotations may be necessary, where they really are negative, is in the defense, where Madrid actually isn't a very deep team.
Yeah, I think that, like, I don't think Zidane has been, I mean, he's kind of been forced into rotating just by virtue of injuries, but it doesn't seem like he's rotating for rotation's sake, and it doesn't seem like he has this, like we kind of knew that Ancelotti had that one 4-4-2 that he just loved, and that was his, like, trump card. Like, it doesn't seem like Zidane has anything like that. Like, when Bale was healthy, they were kind of playing a 4-2-3-1 with Kroos and Modric deeper and Isco playing more forward. I mean, this is something I find really encouraging about Zidane's Real Madrid, is that he likes to put his players in positions to succeed. If you look at the heat maps,
I agree.
Like, James is playing exactly where he likes to.
I got to tell you, Mike, and I think this is interesting. One of the things that I would say about this with respect to Zidane is that he's not Ancelotti, right? So he's not just going to replicate Ancelotti. So this may be something. So this is one of the things I remember with Mourinho, which Mourinho was actually pretty good at trying to put his players in position to do the things that the players do well, right? So I don't know if, Josh, you guys would agree with that, but this is, to me, a symptom of him studying under Mourinho also. So he says, okay, well, this is actually a squad that isn't exactly constructed to play the Ancelotti, you know, style exactly. So why don't we try to experiment with a couple of different formations, trying to put players in position to succeed in ways that they're good at. I mean, like, I think that he has managed, right? We saw when Bale was playing for him, managed to maybe continue the form that Bale was in from Benitez, seeing what Benitez was doing well with Bale, and to adapt it for his own style.
But it's a flexible style, and I think that's important. You know, you have a big squad with a lot of egos, people who aren't going to get to play every week because you've got, you know, more stars than you have starting berths. So I think it's important to manage that appropriately.
Right. And that's, I totally agree.
To give players, make them feel valued. And Mourinho did not always do that successfully, but he was by and large good at that.
Right. And that's why, like, ultimately, right, I've always said, and this is something that a lot of people don't agree with. I know that Boz, for example, really doesn't agree with this, but I think that it's actually having a plethora of talent on a team is actually good. And so if you have a good manager that can manage the egos, Madrid has not always had that, but the more talent, the better, if you have that good manager, and maybe that's what we're seeing with Zidane, but we'll see, right? Keon, do you agree with this?
100%. I don't think you should undervalue this. Like, if you look at Zidane, Ancelotti, and Del Bosque, the one common trait they have is getting the best out of their players. It's not that maybe that they were always brilliant tacticians, but they knew where the players should play. They knew how to motivate the players. They knew how to keep the dressing room calm, the egos in check. I mean, like, Modric said something a few weeks ago that was interesting. He said that every bit of advice that, this is paraphrasing, but he said that every bit of advice that Zidane gives is like gold dust. And that's like, it's pretty interesting that that's how the players feel about him. Like, they respect him that much. They really tune into what he's saying.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunately for people like Benitez and Mourinho, that's always been the problem they've had, is that it's difficult to convince people of their ideas when they haven't had a successful playing career. And Zidane, having been such a legendary player, has a lot of credibility. In the same way that Ancelotti did, actually. Ancelotti was a very, very good player in his time. And so he brings that with him, like, that he's had that success and he knows where they've been. And people want to follow somebody like that. You know, whether your ideas are good or bad, you know, it's an important, it can be a very powerful feature. And that's always been Rafa Benitez's problem, is that he's been mocked for not having had a good, good playing career or one at all, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I remember Phil Quitromolides of Real Madrid TV talked about upon Zidane's appointment, is that, like, he's the type of guy that when he speaks in the room, everybody shuts up and listens, and everything he says has a certain gravitas to it.
I think that's also, it's not just, here's the thing, just because you're a great player doesn't mean you have the personality to be that, right? Like
Zidane's always had a
right, he has always
intensity.
Exactly, and so if you watched him even during his playing days, he was the type to command the players on the field, and just by his, and he wouldn't say, people are going to be unhappy with this analogy because whatever, but Zidane reminds me a lot of the leadership style of Derek Jeter on the Yankees. Yeah. Not because they're equivalent players. Zidane is much better than Jeter ever was, but the point is that it's a player who is very quiet, but also a very kind of respected and competent leader, at least in the way that everyone views him. And Zidane, the way that Zidane acted as a player and now as a manager, seems to me less of a, you know, constantly in everyone's face, but also the type of person who's just exudes this absolute class, right? And whatnot. So I may be wrong, and you all may have a different interpretation of that, but that's kind of the way I've viewed him so far.
The secret is having a glowing, beautiful bald head with Derek Jeter. That's the key to being a good leader.
And Pep also.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the common denominator? Glowing bald head.
And good gorgeous suits. Pep and Zidane both.
Zidane is just rocking these suits, guys. It's just out of control. So let's quickly go ahead to Roma, unless anyone else has more to say about this. Obviously the Roma's actually not a bad team. I know that, you know, all right.
That's not clear. It's hard to know.
They have some areas where they can hit you and they can hit you hard, right? Pjanic is a really good player.
Didn't he, like, give us a bit of a scare some number of years ago when he was playing for Lazio?
He is a great.
I remember that. That was really
Madrid
sad.
Has been, like, going, like, has been linked to him numerous occasions. He's not a bad player. They have some pace on the wings. They're not a ridiculous, right? They're not a team that you can just laugh at. At least I can't. I would never laugh at a Real Madrid going to an Italian team also.
Well, I think it's an interesting question because you look at what happened in the Champions League group stages. They got absolutely hammered by Barcelona 6-1. I mean, that was a slaughter. They finished second in the group, but, like, barely. They had 6 points and -5 goal differential. You know, it was not a good record in a group that wasn't really that strong with Leverkusen and Bayer Borisov. And then you bring in, you know, they're fourth in Serie A. They are on a good run, though. They're on a run of four successive victories. And they had kind of a shakeup in the January transfer window. So it's really, I think it's very unpredictable because they got rid of Gervinho. He went to China. And they brought in for $18 million. And he was their like top scorer, I think. Joint second scorer. Okay. And then they brought in El Shaarawy and a couple other attacking players. Diego Perotti and Erwin Zukanovic, whoever that is. I don't know.
I think El Shaarawy scored in his debut, too.
Yeah.
But do you guys want some really weird statistics about Roma that may or may not have any meaning whatsoever?
Yes, please. Absolutely. Yes, let's do it.
All right, that's like my specialty. So they have five players who are 6'2 or taller, which is 189 centimeters for Keon and our European listeners.
Oh, yeah, thanks for that conversion.
They have five players that are really tall. Real Madrid have one, and it's Rafa Varane. Or I guess Real Madrid have two, but one is Kiko Casilla, and I don't think he's going to be playing center back. So Roma are like a tall, good in the air, good on the long ball. Like you kind of know how they're going to try and get their goals. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. And this is the more encouraging stat, is that they've kept one clean sheet in their last 20 Champions League games, and it was in their last match against Bate Borisov. And I really think that the objective should be, like, let's get an away goal. If we get two, that's complete gravy, but get at least one away goal to let them play their game at the Bernabeu.
That's always the objective, though, right?
Yeah, that's a really hot take on my scoring away goals in the Champions League is a good thing.
The next thing you're going to say is that generally it's better to score more goals than the other team.
Mostly. In most instances, yes.
I think that's the danger of playing Roma, is that, I mean, they have some good players, but they'll also be pretty good on set pieces. So they're obviously going to play on the counter and try to score from set pieces. And both of those, you know, you could argue that both of those are weak points for Real Madrid, right? Defending in transition and defending set pieces. I mean, that in combination with Italy being a tough place to play, it's not going to be a walk in the park. But
I think it favors us in some ways. I mean, the fact that they're so leaky, you know, I think we have a good chance of banging in a bunch of goals. I think it's a matchup that we're favored in. I think that when the matchup was made, it was one of the best ones we could have gotten. I still think we're very likely to go through. I don't foresee it being a super difficult game, but anything can really happen in a knockout game. So you never know.
Yeah, I mean,
here I am being the like sunshine and roses.
Yeah,
and you guys
I'm surprised
how
that
the tables have turned.
Yeah,
I mean, say what you will. This is the Champions League, and Madrid has been knocked out by fucking, you know. I mean, like, we've been knocked out by worse teams in this game.
Sure. Yeah. When we were cursed by, you know.
Yeah,
by a
bitch,
or whatever. I don't remember something.
I agree with Josh that it's like not just, I mean, obviously there's a big favor in terms of talent and quality for Real Madrid. But I think in terms of style of play, I think it'll be favorable for us, especially in attack. The whole notion that it's being played in Italy and that it's going to be crazy, I think is totally valid. I mean, it's been at least a month and a half since the last run of Champions League games. I don't even think it was in 2016 yet. Like, these are the first Champions League games of 2016. These Roma fans are going to be just like electric and fired up and going absolutely bonkers. So I mean it'll be fantastic entertainment, but I think there's reason to sweat this game. I mean, of course there is, it's a Champions League game.
So the latest report is that Marcelo is going to play. Does that worry you guys at all? I mean, in the sense of you know, with Bale relapsing his injury, and do you think we're rushing? I mean, Marcelo had a dislocated shoulder. I'm not a doctor, but there's got to be some concern there.
I'm not a doctor either. I'm a medical student. I don't know is the answer. If it wasn't a particularly bad dislocation and they popped it back into place, I don't see why he couldn't play. If they're letting him play, it's clearly not that bad.
I don't trust anything about Real Madrid's goddamn doctors, though, right?
Well, that's what I'm just – I'm going based on track record. That's all. Like,
whatever.
Yeah. No, you're right, though. At the end of the day, actually, Josh is making a good point that a shoulder is not – it's not the same as, like he has – there might be a knee injury or
it's
something.
It's not an injury that's as likely to relapse. And it's not a muscular injury where
right.
the prognosis is really dubious and it just needs rest and it needs for the inflammation to die down. I'm not – it's not terribly concerning to me. If it were a serious injury, a dislocated shoulder is not the kind of thing that they would be like – well, let's just chance it. I assume that it's playing that it was a relatively more minor injury than they initially thought.
And he is kind of a notoriously quick healer, at least as far as, you know, quick healing goes. He's not the type that sits out excessive weeks, even though I do kind of like the notion. I like to be kind of vanilla about it. And just, I think it's better to just not rush the back. I'd rather wait a week too long than rush them a player back a week too soon.
I mean, I feel that way about leg injuries, you know, especially difficult, dangerous injuries, ones that are very likely
right.
to collapse, like a hamstring tear or a, you know, or some kind of calf trouble like Gareth Bale's always having. But I don't know if I feel that way about certain.
Well, wasn't Ramos's shoulder injury also a dislocation?
I don't remember, actually. No, Ramos had a very a somewhat more unusual shoulder injury, if I recall. He had a acromioclavicular joint.
Wow, I don't know what that means.
it's essentially, it's the, you know, your clavicle is your collarbone, and if you follow that out to your sort of top of your shoulder, there's a bony prominence there, which is your acromion, and there's actually a joint between them. It's a kind of hard injury to get. I mean, you have to. It's not like your run-of-the-mill shoulder injury, as far as I'm aware.
I really wish I knew enough about the subject to debate this with you, but I'm going to succumb to your knowledge here.
I mean, you know, it's just what it is. I remember we talked about it at a time. My again, non-expert opinion was solicited about his shoulder injury. I don't know why people ask me that. You should really ask Jerry, what's his name?
Yeah.
Sorry, he's a physiotherapist. He's the resident doctor. Yeah.
He knows
how to do it. I'm reading right here that it was a dislocated shoulder for Ramos, but there was like lingering...
Right, there are different dislocations that you can have.
Yeah, yeah. And there was like rumors of needing surgery. I think to answer the initial question, I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if Marcelo plays. I wouldn't be surprised either way. And I don't think it would be particularly foolish. Like you were saying, I'm kind of contradicting myself, but there is a difference between a shoulder injury and like a hamstring injury or a knee injury. So I don't know what else to say about this match. I mean, I'm excited to have Champions League football back, to have a reason to like ditch out of work for a few hours on Wednesday afternoon. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a good game. All right, let's take some questions, Keon. Why don't you go to those?
All right. I think this actually ties into what we're speaking about because it's about injuries. So Los Merengues at Cruztalk asks, is holding on to Bale worth it if he keeps on getting injured around important games?
You caught that, Gabe. Well done.
Yeah, it's been happening since first season. All right, so this is like a recurring question. To sum up, a lot of people are asking if Bale is worth it to build around moving forward because he's injury prone. And no one said it outright, but people kind of, I think, feel that he's like Robin 2.0 or something.
Oh, people are wrong. I don't know what to say. Like,
I mean, at some level, it's too late. We already decided to build a money on it.
Fair.
I don't think that that's the same. That's a huge problem. Ronaldo gets injured sometimes.
People get injured. There was a period where Messi every season would get
that happened for actually a long time. People don't remember that because now he's pretty fit.
Yeah.
He spent huge amounts of the season out with these little niggling injuries. What happened with Robin. That's what I was saying before the show, by the way, is everyone was like, oh, Robin's always injured all the time, and I was guilty of this too. And then we sold him on, and what does he do? He's the best player, one of the best players in the world, and he wins Bayern the treble.
Right.
Which is incredible, and we regret bitterly every moment of that. So I'm saying is don't count on that. That's the one.
Yep, 100% agreed.
That's your one example, because it's not a good example.
I don't know. Like, what? Okay, so if you're going to say something like that, the only next step is you have to present alternatives. And so what's the next step after?
Is it Barcelona? Who else are you going to get? There's no one else at that level.
I just don't – what do you want? Like,
I mean, I'll say this. Like, I don't agree with – I mean, I agree with you guys, but – it is frustrating, like, don't you think? Like, every time, like, I'm like, hey, this is
You wouldn't
awesome.
Be a fan of this team if it wasn't frustrating when one of the best players, like, maybe the second best, if not the best player on the pitch recently, has gone down with injury.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, just the upside, and not even accounting for the investment, like, the upside to Gareth Bale is so worth it. Like, if it was... If the question was, like, is it worth buying him, if this was happening to a player that wasn't already on the squad, it would be... a really interesting discussion, but I mean, I am, like, you know, the flag bearer of the Gareth Bale fan club, so I really think it's just an unequivocal yes that it's worth holding on to him. And just hope that he comes around. Yeah, I think the Messi point's a very interesting point.
Just got a feeling of nostalgia because I remember when last time we went to Roma for a knockout game, it was 2008, and that's the time where they knocked us out. Raul scored, I think, in Rome, and now I remember being younger, and I was just kind of – I was psyched because, oh, yeah, Robin's going to tear these guys. But Robin didn't play. He was injured. And I just remember that being so frustrating with, like, Robin was so good when he was on the field, but in key stretches of the season, he just wasn't there. I think that's, like, as great as he was at Bayern afterwards, I think that was mentally – that's how I justified selling him and replacing him with Kaká was basically – well, as great as Robin is, if he's not going to play, he might as well just... I'm not saying that's the right way to think. I'm not saying that at all.
Ever made.
Oh, in hindsight, completely, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, like, what was the point of getting rid of him also?
Well, I mean, saving... in fact, I think he was supposed to pay for Ronaldo, but...
I mean, I guess someone had to make room for Kaká. And Ronaldo.
Yeah. It was unwise.
Yeah.
What can you do? What's done is done. Let's not repeat that mistake. And I guess my point on the Bale thing is, like I just said, I don't think there are any other options.
Yeah.
Like, there are not that many players at that level. Real Madrid are already going to have to cope with losing Ronaldo soon as he ages out.
Yeah.
We can't afford to...
We have spent too much time on this question.
Yeah, let's moving on. Next question.
All right. At Raj_knocker, what more does Kova need to do to be in the first 11? He's superb and surely a long-term replacement for Modric. Thoughts? What do you guys think?
I think you said it. He's the long-term replacement for Modric, which means in the short term, Modric is in his position. that's a horrible thing to say, but it is true.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll continue to get substantial minutes. He's the long-term replacement for Modric, which is a good thing because Modric is a player who needs to be rested, and I think Zidane recognizes that. So I think we'll be seeing plenty of Kovacic. I don't think he'll be, like, I mean, bearing a just absolutely ludicrous run of form, I don't think he'll be, like, one of the unquestioned players of the starting 11, but... I still think he'll get a non-zero amount of minutes the rest of the way.
Hold on. Didn't we have a big discussion that on like a couple podcasts ago that Pogba was going to be Modric's replacement?
Well, that's what I want, but everyone else.
No, this is a rabbit hole I don't want to go down.
Right. I don't think we need to go into this. I mean, like, we've had this conversation so many times. Like, I think that Pogba is better and brings more to the table than Kovacic, but if we don't get him, Kovacic provides
Pogba.
So. Right. So Kovacic provides a solid, like, you know, option there. And yeah, I like what he provides. He's young and he's exciting. So fair enough.
All right. So we're not going to go there.
No.
All right. Next question. At Fab Femizi, I think that's what it says. I'm worried that Casemiro is not getting playing time because when push comes to shove, Cruz can't defend. What do you guys think?
I think this is kind of what we were talking about not long ago, in that Zidane has these different lineups and rollouts pending the opponent. And I think right now the midfield you know, Kroos, Modric, Isco, James are all playing so well that Casemiro is just not going to crack the, you know, he's going to have a hard time getting real minutes when everybody's playing this well. I don't think, maybe I'm an optimist here, but I don't think Kroos's lack of defending is going to be problematic. I don't think it has been problematic in 1.5 seasons so far. So I'm a Casemiro fan, and I think we'll see him a fair bit. But I think it would be nuts to shoehorn him into the starting 11.
I've never been a huge Casemiro fan. I'm in the minority here. But I share our reader's concern about the defensive ability of our midfield. I still think it's lightweight, and I think that we will pay for that at critical portions of the season. Whether or not Casemiro is the appropriate answer to that question, I will leave as an exercise for the reader.
That's what I think that Pogba could – that's one of the reasons I'd like Pogba. I think he could develop that just based on the physical tools, and that's all I'm going to say. Like, he could bring that just like, and I'm not saying that he has it now. I'm just saying that when you look at prospects in baseball and other sports, you look at – part of their tools, right? And you look at like what they can bring when you do, like Keon, I'm sure you know well, when you're looking at prospects for the NBA, you look at what they bring and what they could adopt based on what they have as their physical tools. And you look at Pogba, he's a big guy, he's pretty, like, you know, he's a strong guy, and it doesn't, just because he's not currently a particularly strong defender, doesn't mean he couldn't bring that to the table if he were asked to, like, develop that as part of his game. I don't know. It's just, that's one where area, for example, where I just don't see Kovacic, right, developing particularly well.
Well, I think Kovacic is one of the stronger center midfielders in terms of his solidity in our rotation right now. But I agree with you, it's not so, you know, my opinion is a little bit different than yours. I see Pogba having been so successful in a midfield triad with Vidal, and I think that you need somebody like that. And Vidal is not a destroyer. He's not like Casemiro. He is a artful destroyer. He has a lot of talent, and I think you need somebody like that. But unfortunately, they're very rare. They're very hard to find now.
Well, I think, go ahead, Mike.
All right. Yeah. To compare Pogba and Kroos, they both weigh like 174 pounds, and Kroos is 6 foot, Pogba 6'3". More or less the same kind of physical specimen. Pogba's a more athletic 175, but I think Kroos totally has it in him to develop that defensive fortitude.
Yeah. I don't think Kroos was the guy we should have signed for that position. I think Kroos would have been better a little higher up the pitch. Having said that, if you watch Kroos this season, because I spent a lot of time like just watching games. Sure. I'm not even watching the game. I'm just watching where Kroos is and what he's doing. And he's intelligent enough to adapt to that role and just be solid.
I'm a huge Kroos fan. And we bought Kroos, keep in mind, because he was a steal.
Right.
We stole him out from under the nose of Bayern.
We robbed him.
Furious.
20.
I mean, that was a great buy.
10, I thought it was less than
25 mil, I think.
But that's
It was an incredible buy for a player of his age and his caliber. World Cup winner, Champions League winner, and won everything there is to win. He's an incredible player. I still think he's being a little bit misapplied in our system, but I don't think that that's a complete loss. I just think that you need to bring in a player to that triad who has more of a pedigree of defensive midfield.
Yeah.
You need to play 4-2-3-1, which is actually what I would propose.
Well, I think like I'm with you 100%, Josh. And I think essentially like he's basically intelligent enough and good enough of a player to mask basically playing out of position. But like you said, he needs to be surrounded by the right players. He needs players like Vidal or Schweinsteiger or players like Khedira that he's used to having behind him. I was doing some research for a mailbag last week, and I realized that every single team who's won the Champions League since the year 2000 has had a pure defensive midfielder. And I was looking at that and I was wondering, like, if Real Madrid pulled it off this year, they'd be the first team since the turn of the century who would do it without a pure defensive midfield.
What is it
about us?
What about us?
When we won in 2014?
Well, we had Xabi Alonso.
Xabi Alonso is a deep line playmaker, but I see what you mean. He's more of a pure defensive midfielder than we have now.
Yeah, I mean, I would have classified Xabi there. That's why I said it, but
I see what you mean. I mean, you know, Andrea Pirlo is in the same sort of category as him, but they're not really defensive midfielders per se.
Not Makelele, right?
They definitely play that role. But I mean, the pure defensive midfielder is a role only evolved.
SCN or whatever, right?
Like the mid, early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean,
well, no, Makelele was in the, I guess it was in the mid, it was the early 2000s is what
yeah.
I'm saying.
So I said mid and then I corrected myself okay. to early, but yeah, you see what I mean. Maybe even like late 90s, but it's
yeah.
And it's a position that I don't think is really tenable anymore, because I think that what you've seen now is that your defensive midfielder needs to contribute more than just being a pure destroyer and distributor. Now, of course, Makelele gets kind of a bad rap. He actually did do more than that, but
yeah,
he was a great part of the team. But that is his reputation.
Yeah, not unlike the rim protecting does nothing else big man in the NBA. It's like that role is kind of being evolved to do more offensively.
Right.
And at least
I agree with that. I think it's interesting though, Mike. That it's interesting that particular role is actually sort of making a comeback when it comes to teams like Golden State, where you can actually just kind of play a protecting big man because the team is like worked. I mean, like, this is a basketball shit. You know, I remember the days when this podcast, Josh, we would do entire episodes just talking about shit like the NBA. Do you remember that?
Well, I don't, because I don't know anything about the NBA.
But you weren't on this podcast.
We did. Then I don't know what you're asking me. Is my point.
We did Magic Madrid podcasts that were just about basketball, and we would bring a couple of like my friends who write for like basketball blogs. I remember that. So
I mean,
glad we're not doing that anymore.
If what you're suggesting is that we should do an hour-long podcast that is a tribute to Kristaps Porzingis, then sign me up. I will cancel all plans to make sure I'm available for that.
If it were football, at least I could say things that sounded like they.
I have a lot of things
to say. What I was talking about, but I don't. But you know,
no one in this podcast gives one shit about American football, is my guess.
Oh, Europeans probably true.
Love American football.
Weird. All right, Kian, let's do another question. Sorry.
back to the original question, just quickly. I think I see Casemiro as just a utility player. Like, I don't think he's, at this stage of his career anyway, he's not good enough to start for Real Madrid. No. However, I think he would be useful as a rotation player in games like that game in Seville against Betis or Granada, when the home team is just riled up. They're playing a very aggressive game. And maybe that's an opportunity for Casemiro to fill in. But anyways, so I think I would say, I mean, there's pretty much really one more question here that doesn't have to do with Bale's injury.
Wow. Well, you guys called it. I thought it was going to be all James all the time.
You know what? I mean, if you, for old time's sake, there is a question here. It's James versus Isco. You want it?
Oh, I don't want it.
All right, we're going to skip.
I never want to answer that question again unless James and Isco get in a cage match.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. So we're going to move on. Man, I lost my...
Which case, James, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I would take James in that sort
of... It's a tough call. They both seem like goody two-shoes, but... Do they really have the killer instinct to win in the Thunderdome, Gabe?
Two men enter, man.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
All right,
one very expensive man, please.
Another question from @Raj_Knocker. Can you please put some light on players that we have loaned out us as on how they're doing and our youth players too?
Can I? All right.
Yeah,
sure. Go for it, Mike.
All right, I'm going to plug Miron's Twitter account, The Real Boz, because he watches like every single Castilla game, and he just watches more football than just about anybody I know. and I kind of form my opinions based on the knowledge that trickles down from him. But my perception of it is Borja Mayoral, whose pronunciation I probably just butchered.
It's actually not so
he's
bad.
A youth player for Castilla. He is pretty sensational in terms of his form lately. He's been like really promising, playing in that kind of upfront winger utility, you know, kind of flexible role. He's probably still a few years away from cracking the starting 11, but he is probably the name to watch. I'm just going to call him Martinho because I don't want to try and pronounce his Norwegian last name. Martin O.
Udegger.
Udegger?
Udegger.
It's Martin my Udegger.
Seriously, that's actually how it's pronounced. That's good.
I'm not laughing at your attempt. I'm laughing at the absurdity. It's kind of my understanding he's been kind of a letdown. I mean, he's still like, what, 17 years old, but I think the jury's still out on him. I remember reading that Lucas Silva, who was at Marseille, I think, was rumored to be moved again during the January transfer window, but he didn't, which is not a encouraging thing. But I still like him as a player. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him going forward. And Marco Asensio has been pretty sensational for Espanyol, like within the top five or six, I think, in terms of assists in La Liga, which is really exciting. He's probably the closest to cracking into getting serious minutes for Real Madrid. He's a pretty awesome player.
Yeah. What's the story on Cheryshev? Did we sell him, or is he a buyback option? Is he on loan? I actually don't remember.
He scored for
Valencia at the weekend.
Game winner, right?
Game winner. First one, yeah. Gary Neville.
Yeah.
There you go. He's a good player. I really like Cheryshev.
Gary Neville. Yeah.
He's a really good player. Although I fear that his Real Madrid career is just effectively over after like not getting any minutes this year, which was kind of his chance. The Copa thing, which I don't think is his fault, but I think he has been scapegoated for. I think it's definitely not his personal fault. But it is a bummer that he was not the impactful squad player that it looked like he would be around August.
It's brutal to be in a team where the backups for, you know, the wing positions are like,
yeah. You know,
Hamas sometimes.
Yeah.
what are we going to do when you're Jose, who's a more established, you know, Castilla player. So
yeah,
it's definitely tough, but he's a good player and it could definitely be useful for us in the future if we create a space for them in the team, which, as you say, unlikely.
One more player worth talking about is Jesus Vallejo. I mean, I wish I had the patience to tune into Segunda games, but from what I understand, he's having a really good season with Zaragoza. Really promising young defender. I think he's 19.
Yeah, he's been great also.
Yeah, he's really promising. So, I mean, my thought is that you need to get him out of Segunda next season and get him into Primera and get him playing some top-flight football, maybe someone like Getafe or, I don't know, somewhere in that category. Regular starter. I think he's pretty much the same age as Varane was when Varane first signed. Varane was 18, I think, and he was playing pretty early too. So,
yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think Real Madrid are in a really envied position in terms of a lot of promising young talent, not only in the academy, but also out on loan, which is something that we talked about when we talked about the pending transfer ban, is that Real Madrid is in a pretty nice spot when it comes to young talent that is budding and seemingly ready to make the...
whether any of them are ever going to get a real chance in the squad.
Yeah, I agree.
That's tough. I'm not suggesting that they should necessarily.
Like, we're talking just now about we have two old aging defenders. We're talking about an exciting young center back in Vallejo. I don't see why he wouldn't get, you know, a shot. Well,
center backs have a much better chance of
attacking
player. I don't see why Asensio couldn't fill a role that, you know, any other young, you know, I don't know.
I just worry about him ending up like so many of the other I'm trying to remember his name. What's his name? Kid came in. He was at Valencia and he blew out his knee.
Sergio Canales.
Yeah, Canales. Yeah. But yeah, I just worry about the ending of Canales. But Canales, we were so into him, and we were like, he's the next big thing. You know, he's brilliant. And then,
yeah, but he hadn't led his team to the Euro Cup and all the stuff that Asensio has done.
No, that's true. That's true.
He didn't have no
one. Asensio's a very promising player and very exciting.
He's probably the most promising prospect in Spain right now.
Oh, yeah, I think that's right. I mean,
like, well, know that, they don't...
that was a big coup.
I'm really sad, like, from, you know what really scarred me was way back when Portillo was coming up the ranks. I was so excited about Portillo.
Didn't he break
all of Raul's records. And he, had an awesome debut. He scored from, 40 yards in his debut against Panathinaikos. I was like, man, this dude's legit. And then I don't even know where he is now.
Yeah, no idea. But, I mean, young players, they're very difficult to predict how they're going to turn out.
Yeah.
One thing we do as a public service is just sort of improve the quality of the Spanish league by churning great players out of our academy who aren't quite good enough to play for Real Madrid. So, I mean, you go to any non-top, top three club and you'll see quite a few Real Madrid alums.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, so many people were angry about letting Negredo and Soldado go. I mean, when you look back at it in hindsight and see what they're doing now, they really weren't good enough for Real Madrid.
No, I mean, Negredo maybe. Negredo's quite good, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this year he's kind of a bust, but...
Yeah, I mean, he has on and off. I think Morata is the one who, could have made it. Might have been a mistake letting him go. But, Benzema's been absolutely phenomenal this season.
That's the thing. Morata, as the traditional target man striker, I just feel like we're clinging to a position that maybe the game is outgrowing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. How many teams play with two strikers these days?
Very few.
That's the thing. If we have room for one striker, I mean, it's really hard to accommodate strikers coming through the ranks for that reason.
I mean, you can see what the kind of – and Chicharito, interestingly, did kind of play in that traditional role, right? But and you can see the impact that he brought as a late-game sub. But no one thinks that Morata wants to play as a late-game injection to this team, right?
No.
He's good enough to play for – start
fucking
for
start for
he's
Juve in the Champions League final. I mean, he's good enough to go to China.
That's the dream now, guys. That's the dream. Take the payday, go to China.
He can come to the MLS.
For Spenor and Eriksen, there are a lot of great coaches working out there now. It's pretty ridiculous, actually.
A lot of money out there. He should come to the MLS, man, play for NYCFC.
Yeah.
With Pirlo and Villa and Lampard.
Yeah. The Chinese league and MLS are... where players go when they want to get them checks.
I don't think that's true about MLS. I don't know how much money is out here, but it strikes me that we're the only country in the sports league in the world that uses this type of insane salary cap stuff. So.
Oh yeah, but they're not. They don't. The salary cap doesn't apply to your designated players. You have three.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about this.
All the players coming over from Europe are designated player spots where they have no salary cap. And they're getting paid lots of money. I don't think they're getting paid quite as much money as China's paying, though. I think people come to the MLS when they want to get paid a lot, but they still want to play.
Yeah.
Whereas if you play in a real league, whereas if you want to go to just take the payday, you go to Saudi, you go to Qatar, you go to you go to UAE.
I've never say that the players are bad people for going and getting more money. Man, get yours while you're young.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you see the pattern is players who tend to go out there, people come from really disadvantaged backgrounds and they have a lot of family members they need to help out or they know that it could all go back down really easily. And the players from more world-class backgrounds tend to go to the MLS, it looks like.
Yeah, as Jalen Rose says, keep getting them checks, it's called the Beckham rule in MLS, is the designated players.
Gentlemen, it's time for me to get back to work. It's been a fun hour and a half, or hour and 20 minutes or so. Wonderful chatting. Keon, thanks for putting up with our junk.
I love it. It's pure entertainment.
And it's a great time. We'll talk again after the different games. We have a Liga game this weekend also that we didn't really talk about. I understand, but you know, the Roma game is more. Maybe we'll do a quick show after the game. But anyways, guys, great talking, and we'll do this again next week. Hola, Madrid.